On today's episode, we talk about all the crazy things that can happen during perimenopause. I'm not talking about the common ones, the hot flashes, the night sweats, vaginal dryness. We're talking about things that you are like, what in the heck is going on? Burning mouth, dry eyes, dealing with all kinds of crazy things. And we talk about why these things happen during this phase of life, what you can do about them, and make sure that we are not going down any rabbit holes with misdiagnosis and mistreatment. So take a listen to today's podcast and make sure that you are in the know of what goes on during perimenopause.
When you look good, you feel good. That's the only way I feel you should. Coulda, woulda, never did it for you. Gotta do it for the love. Do it for the culture. Feel it in your soul, life like a roller coaster. Got its ups and its downs, but you gotta keep going. Don't stop when you still got motion. Stay dedicated, daily devotion.
Monday. It's a Monday. Oh my gosh. So this morning, I don't know if I'm aging myself here, but the Olsen twins, did you ever watch?
Yes. All of their movies?
Yes. So Marcus was saying he wanted to listen to the song, I Feel Good. And oh my gosh, what is the one where they're at their lake? It's like, I feel good.
Yes.
Yeah. And now I want to watch that movie. That's not the feel good song Marcus wanted. It was the other feel good song. But I was like, we have to listen to this. It's such a classic.
I loved their Atlantis Bahamas movie.
Yes. What? Oh my God. Okay. I probably watched their movies 100 times.
Yes. Their Halloween one.
Yeah, I'll have to look at like the whole list. The camping
Holiday in the Sun. That's the one that the Holiday in the Sun one was the one that I liked the most.
Yeah, It Takes Two. That was my favorite one. So anyways, or The Camping Party. That was also good too.
They were like detectives, right? That was their thing.
Yeah.
God, such
How the West was fun when they were on the ranch. That was a good one too.
Such great filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I wonder what they're up to today. Who knows? Who cares? Whatever.
They're super skinny.
Let's talk about this concert that you're going to and the guy who has now.
Oh my God.
Been arrested.
So Morgan Wallen's a bit of a hothead and I knew this. And so we booked impulsively, I should say. I've been wanting to see Morgan Wallen for over a year. And so I keep randomly looking at tickets and like where he's playing. And so initially we were going to go to Philadelphia because Nick's from Philadelphia. All of his family's from Philadelphia. And I looked at tickets and they were like $500 a piece. I was like, no chance. And so then I saw he was playing in Nashville. And I was like, I love Nashville. Nashville's a good time. Yep. And it's close. Nick can get flights for free because he flies so much with Southwest. And I looked at tickets and they were like $200 a piece. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's much more reasonable. So I booked them. And then we looked at hotels, which were not reasonable, but I did find one that was like $350 a night versus most of them are $500 plus a night. So we booked that, and then we finally found flights for decent points, amounts. And then Nick texted me yesterday and said that Morgan Wallen was arrested for throwing a chair off of a sixth-floor window at a bar in Nashville. And his court date is the date that we have the concert. And Nick's like, at least the court date is in Nashville. And I was like, yes, and I'm sure. I mean, he's a celebrity. He's probably not going to appear for himself in court. I'm sure he will have someone appear for him in court. I don't think the concert will be canceled.
But also, like, what a jerk move.
Like, who throws a chair off of a sixth floor window? Yeah. Like, you could kill someone down there.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you're not in college.
Yes.
So, come on. Like, a college kid doing that, okay, you're young, you're stupid. Maybe you, like, have it's your first time drinking alcohol or whatever, but come on.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So anyways,
sometimes I just feel like you live in this world where like frequently I find myself saying like, what the fuck is happening?
Like what did I tell Liz last week when she was going through all of this stuff with trying to get cleared for surgery? I was like, what is God trying to show you right now?
For sure. No, I agree with that. And I said that this morning too, when I was sharing a little bit about like the postponing, like I think this is totally like a God thing. Mm-hmm. Because also then I woke up Monday morning, like, starting to get sick. And because I was like having this conversation back and forth with God. And I don't know if you guys have seen this meme, but I saw it and I was like, yes. It basically says, like, I wish God would just walk into my living room and sit down with me and tell me this is the plan and this is how it's going to go. Because a lot of times I'm like praying, right? And my mom just had this amazing like intuition or connection with God where like she would just know what the right thing to do was. And I have been praying about this, like, God, in my gut, I feel unsettled. Maybe that's already a sign to postpone and hold off, but like, tell me what the right answer is. Like, I need to know, because again, I mean, I do need to have either a replacement or a removal at some point in the next few years. It's not an emergency, because I have one that has moved and it just doesn't, I mean, feel too great. It's fine. It's, everything is fine. I'm fine. But I was like, okay, well, I guess if I get sick, I can't have surgery. So maybe that'll be another sign. But every roadblock through that, I was like, okay, I just feel like this is, you know, I don't know, but I do. I wish God would come in and sit down with me and say, this is what you should do.
Yep.
Or this is not going to happen. And, you know, I will change your heart for things, you know, to be accepting of that or whatever. So gosh, it's challenging sometimes.
Like, I reposted Matthew McConaughey's, he did like an interview.
Okay.
And he talks about green lights, and he's like, if our whole life was green lights without any yellows or reds, what would we even be here for? Like, you don't learn from the greens. You learn from the yellows and the reds, and you grow from them and you become stronger from them. And Jocko Willink, who both Liz and I like a lot, he was a commander in Navy SEALs for a really long time and ran a lot of operations and such, and very big mental toughness guy, motivation. And he said that he used to have this officer that would come to him all the time with things like, this is going wrong, this is going, you know, and he would be like, good.
Eventually
the officer was like, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say good, because it's going to teach me something, or it's going to help us do something better, or whatever it might be. And so I've been trying to constantly shift my mindset around this of, if this is going on in my life, good, because it's going to help me better in some way, shape, or form, even if I don't see it yet, to help others or to better live my life in alignment with what I want or whatever it might be. But sometimes when you're in the thick of it, you don't want to think that. You just want to be angry and you want to be mad and you want to just say screw it to the world and put the middle finger up. But
well, that's the other thing too. When we were talking through just all of this stuff, and this is going to apply to any situation, like, you're so frustrated. Like, I'm human and I can get pissed real fast, real easy at things. It's frustrating. And then on the flip side, it's like, okay, like, reel it back. Let's be positive. Let's think positive. I don't love like all of that stuff personally, because like, I like shit to get done. Like, I want, you know, to have a plan. I want to execute. I want to get shit done. Like, I don't care about all the like fluff, like the good jobs and like, oh, you know, whatever. And so like, for me, when I just think about some of these really frustrating situations, I'm trying to think, okay, like, if I have to stay positive through this, then what can I learn from it? In this last situation, I really didn't learn anything that I feel like is valuable for the rest of my life. It's kind of like all the people posting about, you know, I'm glad that I learned about, I don't know, chronometers or something for tax season. You know, I'm always using my chronometer skills. It's just crazy. Like, I want things, we wish that things would just go smoothly, and they don't. Did you know that we have a members-only private community, Fit Mom Society, where you can access the entire Fit Mom team of practitioners, where we answer your questions in depth. You're also going to get premium content that we release every month, so you can get started on your journey to better health until you're able to join the one-on-one Healthy Gut, Happy Hormones. And you're able to connect with like-minded women on the same journey to encourage you and help hold you accountable. So if you're ready to join today for less than $1 a day, you can click the link in the show notes to access the Fit Mom Society. And then it gets worse when you go to perimenopause and you're like, what the F is happening to my body, and your hormones are all over the place. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And in the trenches here, hopefully you will be learning some things about your body and, you know, maybe finding ways to improve it or at least getting some lessons out of it. But we want you to understand that some of these symptoms that you might be experiencing are normal. And I would say, like, it's okay to be frustrated. It's not okay to hate on your body and think negatively all the time, or just constantly blame things, right? Like, mm-hmm. Perimenopause. I think right now I'm seeing a lot more of like, it's perimenopause, it's perimenopause, it's perimenopause. Well, is it, or is it the 45 years that you have not focused on helping your body with, you know, the right foods that really are nourishing? Is it that there's a lot of toxicity in your life, whether that's, you know, things that you're putting on your skin, hair, you know, whatever, or products that you're using in your home or relationships, right? Not managing stress, not listening to these silent or these, you know, subtle symptoms, I should say, and just, you know, kind of silencing them. Is it perimenopause, or is it the fact that like everything leading up to has led you to a place where things are getting worse because the body is already in a place of dysfunction and now we're dealing with hormonal swings and imbalances?
Yeah. And one thing that I will say is a lot of people ask me, does cortisol change in perimenopause? And my answer is no, but how you handle it does. And so it feels like cortisol gets worse or you have bigger issues with cortisol, but it's just because your body is not as good at dealing with it as it was in its 20s and 30s, early 30s, I should say. And so you need to be willing to change. That's the bottom line. You need to be willing to change to help see improvement with things, because what you used to do is not going to work anymore because your body is changing. And so we're not going to talk about like mood swings, hot flashes, irritation, irregular periods, vaginal dryness. Like those are very common, well-known symptoms of perimenopause. What we're going to talk about today are different things that happen that often result in misdiagnosis and mistreatment or overtreatment that can be somewhat, I don't want to say normal, but can be common in perimenopause and why they happen. So we're going to dive right in because there's a few of them. The first one's pretty
wild.
They are. And this, I get asked about these a lot. And so I've dove down rabbit holes, helping to understand better things. Cause even sometimes people hit me and I'm like, not that I know of, but let me check if that's correlated to perimenopause, because it might be.
I feel like I don't put anything past anything anymore, because yes. Also, for example, people will ask a lot of questions and it really depends upon the person. Some people are so sensitive to different things that even though you're taking like such a low dose, if you had like a really negative, like I think of, for example, DHEA. Okay. So I had a client taking like 10 milligrams of DHEA, very low dose, should not at that level have impacted her the way that it did, but she was very sensitive to it. I mean, like she had all of the signs of, okay, you need to stop this immediately. Whereas somebody else who is low DHEA as well could be taking 30, 40, 50 milligrams and not, you know, reacting that way at all. So everything is so bio individual. And I think a lot of that comes down to just your whole internal, you know, environment that, you know, obviously your microbiome and things like that. By the way, fun fact before we get into this. So at church this past weekend, we were talking about the DNA of Christianity and your identity in Christ, which was, it was really, really good. But they shared some facts about DNA. And so, I mean, I knew some of this from just studying genetics, but like 99% of us, like we are the same. So Becca and I are 99% the same. It's that 1%. But in that 1%, that's so powerful. That's also what separates you apart. And so even though we're going to go through some of this, some of these may be you, some of them may be not, right? Just know that even some of the general things out there that you hear to help resolve, most of them, you know, probably can, you know, benefit you, especially if they're helpful. Like, okay, you're getting enough fiber, right? Flaxseed, chia seed, whatever. A lot of a variety in your diet. But for other individuals, especially when it comes down to symptoms, symptoms can be low or high, right? Like we talk about this all the time with estrogen, for example, or progesterone. Like, some of the symptoms are the same, whether it's high or low. So it's really looking at you and the whole picture. So just remember that as we go through this. And the last thing I want to share about DNA is that your DNA could span, if it was stretched out, all the way to Pluto and back. Isn't that wild?
We are so amazing, complex, crazy individuals. The human body's insane.
Yeah.
We will never know everything about it.
No.
Never, ever.
We only try. God.
Only God. Okay. So the first one is called burning mouth syndrome. Sounds great, right? It is a painful burning sensation on the tongue, lips, gums, and other parts of the mouth. It can feel scalding. It can feel like tingling. It can feel numbness, and hot and spicy foods make it worse. So technically the cause is unknown, but there is study that suggests that the hormonal changes during menopause are a factor because estrogen plays a really large role in the development and maintenance of our nerves and tissues. This is why we see it with the affect the vaginal canal so much, and why a lot of people experience vaginal dryness, vaginal pain, difficulty with orgasms is actually really common. I don't think this is on this list, but difficulty with orgasming is really common in perimenopause because of how estrogen affects the nerves in the tissue, in the labia and the vaginal canal. And why we see a lot of times like UTIs, all that kind of stuff. And so this decline in estrogen levels can affect the nerve function and can cause inflammation, can cause dryness, and can cause pain in the mouth. So relieving of it, you know, sucking on ice chips, avoiding acidic foods, drinking plenty of water, making sure you're hydrated. You can look into, obviously, hormone replacement therapy for a number of these symptoms that we're going to dive into. Sometimes they will use like topical pain relief for things. I would also consider making sure you're taking good care of your oral microbiome, you know, tongue scraping, water flossing, brushing with an electric toothbrush, all of those things. Getting checkups, all of that can be helpful as well. But yeah, burning mouth syndrome is number one.
Does not sound fun.
No.
The second is electric shock sensation. So I've had a couple of people who have felt this before, where basically it's just like that sharp, like very sudden sensation of an electrical shock. So it might be like zapping, tingling, or jolts just in various parts of your body, head, neck, limbs. And typically this is harmless or, you know, something that is just more acute, temporary, but it could also be, you know, this I wouldn't ignore, a sign of a more serious condition. So some people will experience this during menopause, which can be related mainly due to estrogen fluctuations. So we know that estrogen works with the central nervous system to send messages along the nerves to the brain. And when hormones start to change, some of these signals can get distorted, amplified, short-circuited, causing, again, you know, what this tingling or shock sensation would be. Other factors that could be coming to play here would be stress, anxiety, withdrawal from certain medications as well. We know that estrogen is also known to enhance the action of serotonin and norepinephrine in the brain. And so when it declines, this can lead to depression or other neurological symptoms, especially if you have a low serotonin efficiency. And so again, here we would think about stress management, things that are, you know, avoiding things that are negatively going to impact our cortisol. So maybe avoiding caffeine and other stimulants, really supporting your sleep. You know, we want to get that good restful sleep. Proper detoxification. So many things happen when we sleep. And then obviously if it's something that is continuing or it's getting worse, it's getting more intense, you want to see your doctor, right? And talk with them about maybe further evaluation or also look to see, is there, you know, a side effect of maybe a supplement or a medication that you are taking that would be driving this.
Number three is called tinnitus. So tinnitus is basically a buzzing or ringing, sometimes like a hissing sound in the ears. And it can be constant. It can be intermittent. Estrogen does play a role in the development and maintenance of auditory pathways in the brain. Can we just please give a moment to how important estrogen is to our health? Estrogen is not the enemy. Estrogen has been involved in the last three of these and is involved in pretty much all of these in some way, shape, or form. So shout out to estrogen. Huge, huge importance in our body. And when we lose it, it creates a lot of issues. So when estrogen declines, obviously it can affect the nerve tissue, blood flow to the inner ear, which can cause tinnitus. Another big thing to understand is that estrogen has a really large interplay with the immune system, and it helps modulate the immune system and the inflammatory response, which can be involved in infection-based cases of tinnitus. Because tinnitus is believed to be somewhat of like an immune-related dysfunction or an autoimmune dysfunction. So managing it, you can use HRT. Absolutely. It has actually been seen that HRT can resolve tinnitus or at least reduce it in a lot of women. The other thing that has been seen to help is actually therapy. So you go through sound therapy or cognitive therapy, basically, to make the tinnitus less noticeable. So you basically have to retrain your brain to not notice it as much because it can be constant. It can be very constant for people and it can be really debilitating, obviously. But you can definitely consult doctors for all of that. But the ringing in the ears, whether it's intermittent or constant, can be a huge one.
Not fun to deal with. Yeah. By any means. We've had a couple clients with that. Another one is sensitivity, skin sensitivities, or itching. And so I think definitely we want to recognize that this can be several reasons, right? In terms of skin issues, we know some people can have eczema, psoriasis, rosacea. We know that also itching can be more histamine related, liver related, but when hormones decline during perimenopause, the skin can itch and feel extra sensitive for a variety of reasons. So one of the main reasons is the reduced production of collagen and just natural oils that we have in our skin, which contributes to keeping the skin strong and elastic, as well as smooth and hydrated. This is also, I think a lot of people say, in their perimenopause years, their skin changes and they feel more dry. They need more oil or moisturizers. And so skin that is deficient in natural oils and collagen is more sensitive, dry, and thin, which can lead to, again, that thinner skin, wrinkles, itching, and irritation. Same thing can happen in the vaginal walls, as we've talked about on other podcasts. So some studies suggest that this sensitivity only truly applies to the skin on the face and the feet. So in order to soothe this itchy skin, you can, you know, moisturize regularly, use mild soap, lukewarm water when washing the face, so not really hot water. Want to try to avoid scratching and then using cold compresses as well as a natural mask. So you can use like oatmeal mask, clay mask, aloe vera gel, calamine lotion, topical hormone replacement therapy as well, especially if there's other issues going on. But you know, again, if you have like rashing or hives, like this is where you might need to use something more histamine or antihistamine related. And again, I would just say in terms of the vaginal itching and sensitivity and irritation, we think low estrogen. And this is a case, and I know we talked about this with couple of other practitioners. I'm blanking on her name, but she's a menopause practitioner. She wrote a couple of really good books. Esther
Dr. Bloom.
Yeah. Esther Blum.
Yep, Blum.
Yeah. She talks about, you know, having a estrogen cream and doing that intravaginally, as well as just making sure that when you are having sex, you know, you're using lubrication. Like I love, you know, coconut oil. It's a brand that we have that's it's very, very clean. And that would be, you know, something that you can use if you're having, you know, intercourse so that things aren't, you know, you're not using spit and saliva for all the bacteria and stuff, but also things aren't like dry and it's not enjoyable. And we're actually looking to have the Better Sex Doctor on our podcast. We're going to look to have the Pink Pill CEO on our podcast. We've got some really interesting podcast episodes coming up because I've said this several times, like we want you to have a good relationship and, you know, feel connected with your spouse, and sex is part of that, right? Like that intimate connection. And so, you know, a lot of women say, I have no libido and, you know, maybe I have, it's irritated, it's dried out, or I'm unable to orgasm. That's not a way to live, right? There's other things that we look at here too. And I know we've talked about this before in terms of like the libido. Yes, for sure. It can be low testosterone or, you know, hormones that need to be balanced out, but also like, what are you doing to spark things up? What are you doing to make time for that? What are you doing to be intentional about, you know, date night and, you know, just touching one another. It doesn't even have to be all the way to home base as we don't want to act like we're teenagers here, but you know, what are you doing to show that affection and that love towards each other, even when maybe you don't feel like it, right? So I'm excited for some of those podcasts coming soon.
Yes. Yes. All right. Number five is called duct ectasia or nipple discharge. So this is a benign condition. It's not cancerous. And it basically is when a breast milk duct expands and its walls thicken, and it can result in basically a blockage of that duct, which can then cause fluid to accumulate and leak. The discharge can be white. It can be green. It can be brown. Usually it's accompanied by breast lumps, tender breasts, inverted nipples. And it's basically believed to be caused by the deterioration of milk ducts, which usually occurs due to fatty anovulation. And this means that the duct deteriorates, the damaged parts change into fatty tissue. So it hardens over time and it gives rise to the classic symptoms. And it typically occurs in perimenopausal women and can persist all the way through menopause. It usually tends to go away sooner. And it's a little unclear whether the hormone decline is involved in causing it or whether HRT can help, but it does. We do see a higher prevalence of it at perimenopause. It doesn't increase your risk for breast cancer. You know, breast cancer can definitely cause similar symptoms, but there is no technical treatment for it. Obviously, like anyone that's had a clogged duct, warm compresses can really help. Painkillers over the counter, or we'll use, you know, certain type of more natural painkillers if we can, looking into the potential of infections, you know, if there is an infection, make sure that you're treating it so it doesn't get worse. But that is something that I think a lot of people get freaked out by, obviously, especially if you're experiencing like a colored discharge coming out of your nipples at the age of 49. So it can be associated with perimenopause.
Lovely.
Right.
Number six, gum disease. So again, we've talked about this before, but generally when people are not healing, we look at a couple of different things. So infections of the mouth, maybe there's root canals, things that you don't even realize bacteria wise going on in the oral microbiome. And then that's further, you know, going into the gut microbiome. And then constantly, you know, the immune system's on alert. It could be implants of any kind, or mold infections and mycotoxins, heavy metals and things like that, that it just haven't, you know, been addressed. But gum disease in menopause, is kind of common for some people. And this is inflammation and infection of the gums. It could cause bleeding, swelling, redness, or pain. So hormonal changes increase the risk of this in women because obviously the hormones affect how the blood supply to the gums in the body's response to plaque is building up. So plaque is that sticky film of bacteria that forms on the teeth, and this can cause tooth decay and gum inflammation. We have our strongest biofilms in our oral microbiome. They also go into the gut and then create biofilms in the gut microbiome. So let's say you have parasites or H. pylori or candida, for example, you always want to make sure you have a biofilm buster in place to break down that fortress or that plaque that's building around the bacteria, because they're doing that as like a protective mechanism. So, you know, I always kind of give that analogy of like, think about when you wake up in the morning, you got that morning breath, that plaque, you need to brush your teeth. That is kind of what you can think of when we take up about these biofilms, that sticky film. So hormones can make the gums more sensitive and reactive to that plaque, leading to gingivitis and periodontitis. Gum disease can also be prevented, though, if you have great oral hygiene. I would say oil pulling here. Coconut oil can be very good. I've actually had clients that have had unknown issues with their tongue, like having different sores or white spots in which the dentist has, you know, kind of deemed it what they thought was more like yeast related, but it would be like very itchy and flaring and irritated. And so using just straight up coconut oil and doing oil pulling, that has really been able to calm down that inflammation. And it also just works as like a natural antimicrobial. We always recommend using a good toothpaste that's not fluoride based that can also help with bacteria. So Elementa is a toothpaste that we like. And I believe the code CODY20 is from Dr. Cody Kringles. I believe that CODY20 for Elementa gets you 20% off.
Love him. We need to have him back on the podcast, I think, too.
Should.
Okay, so number seven is acne. A lot of people look at perimenopause as somewhat reverse puberty, because it comes with a lot of really similar irregular heavy periods, acne popping up, moodiness, water retention, all of those things. So hormonal acne affects a lot of women undergoing perimenopause due to the decrease of estrogen and progesterone that causes a relative increase of testosterone and a lot of other of our androgen hormones. And so this can cause more what's called sebum, which is skin oil. And it produces at a higher level. Then acne occurs a lot of times along the jawline is where we'll see it, especially related to hormonal-based acne. Luckily, hormonal acne can be treated similar to like itchy, sensitive skin. Washing your face daily with the prop. Look at pH levels of your face wash. So a lot of companies actually aren't required to put a pH level on their face wash. You can Google what the pH level is, and you want to make sure that it's not too of like acidic of a face wash. And then also make sure that it's a good quality in terms of, you know, ingredients. I like Yuka app for that, for a lot of things. You could get testing done, like a Dutch test could work for this, or you could even just, you know, get a blood test done for testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, DHEAS, stuff like that to kind of see what your levels are and the relative levels of them. And then there is the possibility to use things like a salt palmetto, stinging nettle tea, things like that to help lower testosterone if necessary. And then work the gut. I think all of those, you know, acne is 80% internal, 20% external from what I've seen. I believe that it's either that or 90-10. And so you need to make sure that you're addressing all things that could be causing it, because acne can also be driven heavily by gut bacteria.
Yep. And low stomach acid, actually. So having low stomach acid, you know, we know that, again, that plays a role in keeping the bacteria in check.
Yep.
But a sneaky sign of low stomach acid is acne. So always be supporting your gut microbiome. The eighth thing here, and this shouldn't be surprising, we've talked about this before, is urinary tract infections. And so we know that the way that estrogen plays a role in the skin elasticity and strengthening the tissues in the vaginal wall and, you know, the bladder and everything, when we are low estrogen, this can leave us more susceptible to having those urinary tract infections or even yeast infections. And that can cause a lot of discomfort, right? So pain, burning, urgency, frequency when urinating, as well as cloudy, bloody, or smelly urine. So when we think about this in terms of women compared to men, we are more prone to these rather than men because we have shorter urethras that are closer in proximity to the rectum. So with hormonal changes, we do have that higher risk. And that is because, again, that decline in estrogen affects the lining of the bladder, the vaginal wall, and the urethra, which makes us more susceptible to bacteria, you know, traveling and causing that infection. So if you're suffering from this in menopause, you know, I think it's important to know there's other things you could do besides just antibiotics, right? I was actually just chatting with one of my clients this morning. Like, I did send her in to get a culture because I'm like, we need to know what we're dealing with here. Is it bacteria or is it that your good bacteria is completely wiped out? We use different things, antimicrobials and antibacterials intravaginally, but we can also use different probiotics intravaginally as well as, again, maybe looking at, you know, estrogen creams, things like that. And then there is obviously evidence to suggest that cranberry juice, vitamin C can inhibit the pathogens to adhere to the urinary tract wall. So that's often why you always see, you know, cranberry juice. I like Uva Ursi. I like some other things that can also help just kind of clear that up more naturally rather than just antibiotics. But I think it's important to know, again, what you're dealing with if this is something that is chronic. But I wouldn't be turning to antibiotics because a lot of times you just eventually wipe out all the good bacteria and you can have a lot of symptoms of irritation, pain, inflammation if your good bacteria is not to the level that it needs to be as well.
I've actually seen for a number of women, you have to address the internal vaginal microbiome. Like you need to do something intravaginally.
Yeah.
A lot of them that have been on chronic antibiotics for UTIs, you can like addressing the gut's big, but a lot of them, it doesn't solve it. And you have to go actually to intravaginal supports. So, number nine, changes in body odor. I get a lot of questions about this. So yes, this is because hormonal changes can have an impact on the composition of our sweat and bacteria that live on the skin. So estrogen and progesterone influence the pH level of your skin, like we already talked about with dryness, stuff like that. And it can affect the growth of odor causing bacteria. So obviously bathe regularly. Hopefully you're already doing that. Using deodorant, maybe you need to put it on more than a couple times a day. Avoiding really pungent foods, things that are like sulfurous containing foods can be one thing that you can avoid. And obviously fried foods, stuff like that. But yeah, the odor thing can be very real. It can be very real when it comes to perimenopause and the fluctuation of hormones. So we haven't covered very many pleasant things.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. A few others that we're going to cover here quickly. So hair loss or thinning. Now, I also want to say that a lot of individuals freak out and they're like, I'm losing my hair. Now there's a difference here between hair shedding and hair loss. So sometimes when we do go through gut healing protocols and we're doing a lot of detoxification, that's stressful to the body. Very similar to how postpartum, you go through a period of time where you're losing hair and then you're regrowing baby hairs. You know, this stress and the hormonal changes can influence that. So one of the things I would say is about 100 to 200 strands of hair per day loss is normal, according to what, you know, we have spoken with other practitioners and hairdressers, you know, about. So if you're brushing your hair and you're seeing that you have, you know, small clumps of, you know, hair loss, but maybe you haven't washed your hair in 4 or 5 days, okay, that's probably on the normal side. Like, I personally don't wash my hair that often, maybe every 5-7 days, to be honest. And so when I brush my hair, I am seeing maybe 30, 40 strands come out, but that's normal. But we do know that, you know, in cases of PCOS, high androgens, we can start to see hair loss at the scalp and hair growth, you know, on the chin or chest, you know, on the face, things like that. And so, you know, head hair can become thinner, weaker, or fall out more easily during perimenopause. Just wanted to put that out there though, that it's maybe not always, you know, hormones. It can be other things too, but this is generally, if it is hormone related, it's because estrogen and progesterone, which are essential for hair growth, and hair health, decline during this phase, right? And so that leads to testosterone being that more dominant hormone in perimenopause. And that is what, especially if you are more androgenic, drives that hair loss. So low estrogen could also affect the circulation to the scalp, reducing the supply of nutrients and oxygen to the hair follicles. So some treatments for this would be, you know, topical things like minoxidil, biotin supplements, hormone replacement therapy, or hair transplantation if it's really bad. You could also use castor oil. You can use rosemary oil. One of the big things, and we learned this from a doctor who is studying genetics for the hair, is that you want to stimulate the area that you feel is thinning. So stimulate those follicles. And she basically said to us, like, if you've ever seen a man who is bald, but is really, really shiny, she's like, those are scarred follicles. And so there won't be hair regrowth there. But if you continue to stimulate the follicles and maybe use some of those oils or things that I just mentioned, and then obviously support your hormones and proper detoxification and things like that, hopefully you can maintain a good, healthy head of hair.
All right. Number 11, another one I get really commonly is dry eyes. So up to 61% of women are affected by dry eye syndrome, where the eyes are dry, itchy, they can burn. And that is because estrogen and progesterone help maintain the moisture and elasticity, not only of our vaginal canal, but of our eyes. So they also are affecting the production of tears and mucus within the eye. So when hormones start to decline, eyes become drier, inflamed, more prone to infections or injuries. You can use things like artificial tears, lubricating eye drops. I really like Codage is a brand on Fullscript, and they have an eye-specific vitamin. I've seen some really good stuff with that. Obviously, HRT can be helpful with this, you know, if you're struggling specifically. Dry eye care by patient one is another one that can be really helpful to try before you go the HRT route. So there's a couple ones out there that can be really helpful, but it is because estrogen and progesterone affect so much in terms of the elasticity of our nerves and our tissue and the lubrication of them. And so we just become a dried out prune, it feels like sometimes during perimenopause, because you lose that hydration coming from the hormones.
Yeah. I really like the dry eye formula in full script that we have.
Yeah, the patient one. I mentioned that one. Yeah.
Okay, good. Sorry, I wasn't listening because I was looking at something else for the next one. And so this is heart palpitations. Some women will experience higher levels of heart palpitations, maybe more frequently, right? Where you're noticing that just an irregular heartbeat. And this is caused by reductions or fluctuations again in estrogen. So again, kind of like hot flashes. Those are fluctuations in estrogen, generally surges. But we know that estrogen helps regulate electrical impulses and, again, enhance blood flow to the heart. And so when estrogen levels drop, the heart can be overstimulated, inflamed, and, you know, result in you having those palpitations or irregular heartbeats. Perimenopause heart palpitations are usually harmless and, again, temporary, but they can sometimes indicate a more serious condition, arrhythmias, hyperthyroidism, or heart disease. I also think that people who struggle with anxiety and maybe get stuck in that state of more, you know, anxiousness, some supplements can also make you feel like your heart is fluttering a little bit more, or you are just more excited, right? There could be other things, you know, that are causing this as well. But if it is something that is, you know, severe, you need to be obviously talking with your doctor. I've dealt with like heart palpitations and things in the past. You can always get like a wearable device and track some of those things and have your, you know, cardiologist review that. Again, when we think about how to manage this, you know, we're going to think what drives states of anxiety, high levels of cortisol. That would be stress. Caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, all of those things can kind of exacerbate that. So we would also want to think about limiting those, paying attention to, like, if you remove caffeine, do you feel a little bit better? Practicing relaxation techniques. So deep breathing, right? Maybe looking at your hormones and working to balance those out. I think in this case, you know, progesterone is very helpful. It's very calming, especially to estrogen. So I know that in cases of high levels of anxiety or mood disorders and some heart palpitations, that can be very helpful. So As always with perimenopause, it's important to test and address. We, again, have no idea. We could always pick up on signs and symptoms for individuals and, you know, start to put patterns and clues together. But at the end of the day, like I mentioned before, some symptoms are the same if it's high or low, right? And so we want to make sure that we are addressing things accordingly to the person. And remember that the goal is not to just continue to suppress things. Right? We want to have a good balance and we want to maintain a good, healthy hormonal profile so that you can live a life full of joy, vibrancy, libido, all of those things, and hopefully make this transition to the other side of menopause more smoothly. So if you guys are looking for help, you want to get to the underlying kind of root cause, maybe you're saying a lot of these ring true, but I've dealt with them for a long time and I have gut health issues, or I've really struggled, you know, with things throughout my life, then maybe you want to test and get to the root cause. And that's what we do in our Healthy Gut, Happy Hormones program. And then before we close the show, we just want to remind you that the Fit Mom Fit Month is coming up next month in May. So you need to be part of the Fit Mom Society to participate in that. And then we also have the LMNT giveaway for April. So if you've not done so, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple. You could just scroll down. It's very simple. You click the 5 stars, you type a little words in there. We want it to be genuine. Send us a screenshot of that. Just email it info@fitmomlife.com and we will enter you to win not one, not two, not three, but 4 boxes of LMNT, our favorite electrolyte. And if you want to already get started with those, there's a link in the show notes to get a free sample pack with purchase. Those are hands down our favorite electrolytes to take. I know I take a few of them daily. Many of our clients do as well. Put a smile on your face. Never let them take your joy away. Let the sunshine make your day. Take your hand of your love, wanna dance the night away. Get away and escape on a vacay. Life's a marathon, not a relay. It's up to you to do what you love to do. Let no one stop you.